very much. So it's a very nice workshop, and thanks for the organizers for putting this together. And I'll be talking about heavy electrophoric resonances at the LHC. This is the first part of my talk is from this paper here, and that will be on the neutral gauge boson, and ongoing work is on the charged case. And this is work done with this group of people here. And I will I'll tell you more about the context, but I will work in a concrete model, which is a warped space model. We'll also try to make it general on what issues we might face at the LHC when we look for heavy gauge bosons. Okay, very briefly, I don't need to dwell too much on this thing here. So the motivation is in the context of the standard model hierarchy problem in stabilizing this separation of scales, the gravity scale, which is very high, and the electrophoric scale, which is at CV, hundreds of GeV or CV scale. And so we have written down lots of models which might stabilize this hierarchy. So we have extra dimensions, the warped variety of flat, supersymmetry, strong dynamics, little Higgs, all of that. And in my talk, I'll be focusing on the warped extra dimension mainly. And also, it's good to keep in mind that given the ADS-CFT correspondence, this warped extra dimension that is in ADS space might equivalently be also thought of as a four-dimensional conformal field theory. And so a lot of the things that I'm going to be discussing, even though in warped language, can be translated into a 4D CFT language. So this is something that you all know better than me. But good to keep that in mind. So here's a brief talk outline. So as I mentioned, I'll be focusing on electroweak spin one states. That are fairly heavy. I'll tell you why they need to be heavy in these constructions. And so the keyword here is electroweak. So I won't be looking at things that are charged under the strong gauge group. I'll be restricting myself to electroweak resonances. And also here in this talk, spin one. So to make this concrete, we work in the warped framework. So I'll tell you exactly what kind of a model we work with so that we know exactly what the couplings are, and we can go ahead and compute the LHC signature. So the gauge group that we take is the SU3 QCD, SU3 color, times SU3, SU2 left cross SU2 right cross U1X in the bulk, in the extra dimensions. And I will motivate a little bit on why it is that we look at this one, but it's all obvious to most of you, I'm sure. So immediately you can see that there are these heavy neutral electroweak, these heavy electroweak gauge bosons, so three of them neutral, which I will generically refer to as Z prime in my talk, and also two charged, which I'll refer to as W prime. So when you hear me say Z prime, you can think of collectively as these three neutral modes. And when I say W prime, these two charged modes. And so the reason this heavy is here is because precision electroweak observables very generally in no matter what specific model that you write down, generically would imply this kind of a constraint. That they be heavier than 2 or 3 TeV. So that's going to make life a lot harder at the LHC, and we have to struggle in order to dig out this signal. And there are other peculiar features about this model that I'll be working with that make it also challenging. I'll come back to that later on. And so the bottom line is that it's not very trivial to find these, and you'll see towards the end that it requires a lot of luminosity. And I'll try to make this general, so anytime we end up with some feature, maybe try to keep in mind that these might be general aspects that we might face, no matter what the origin of these gauge bosons are. But as I mentioned, we'll be working in this context.
So you wrote a paper where you show how you can suppress the S-prime and the S-prime for lighter.
That is in Higgsless models?
And you just talk about wild colors models, yes.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you could do that, yeah. And reduce it, though we don't have an explicit realization in this class of composite Higgs models of that being done.
But you could do the same thing.
Yeah, sure, yeah. So I just want to point out that I won't be discussing about the SU3 KK gluon, the SU3 color resonances, which has been talked about or written about in this work here, so you can refer to that one. Or the spin-2 resonances, which are the KK gravitons in the Warp language, and that has been written up here, so you can refer to these. So I won't be talking about these resonances, but will restrict to electroweak, as I've mentioned. So it's good to keep in mind that it has SU3 color charge, and it might be a little bit easier because the coupling is a little bit bigger, and you don't have to work this hard. So here's something that I won't spend too much time on, but just the basic framework that we have a warp space given by the metric here, radius space. And so we have the usual Planck brain and the IR brain, and we look at gauge bosons and fermions propagating in all of the extra dimensions. The Higgs is mostly localized towards the IR brain, thus solving the hierarchy problem. And so a lot of the couplings and the LHC signatures are driven by this kind of general setup. So that will dictate a lot of the couplings, and that's what we work with. And so it's good to keep in mind that the parameter of this model is this k pi r. So k is the curvature scale of this radius space, which is a mass scale. And pi r is the length of this warp extra dimension. So this is our 4D, 4D Minkowski coordinates, these slices here. And this is the extra dimensional warp coordinate. And so for solving the hierarchy problem, there is this k pi r. Which, given a high curvature scale, which is close to the Planck scale but somewhat below it, will be related to the low electroweak scale by this expression here. So we can keep in mind that k pi r is some number of orders of 34, which will dictate a lot of the couplings that I will be talking about. So again, bulk fermions explain the flavor FCNC problem. This is something that Andy talked about yesterday. So we'll be working in that kind of context that we also explain the fermion mass hierarchy in the standard model by playing around with profiles in the extra dimension of the fermions. And that also has a significant impact on how we look for them in the LHC, because that is going to put some peculiar features on the couplings, and that will dictate our search strategy. So that's something that is good to keep in mind, too. So one brief slide on precision electroweak constraints. So if we are going to work on this thing, so this is what will tell us that we need to look for heavy states. So early on, it was pointed out that bulk symmetry will lead to a large SNT parameter by these people here. And later on, it was pointed out that having a bulk gauge symmetry, which is SU2 right, if you gauge that symmetry, then it can provide you with a custodial symmetry that will protect the T parameter. But then the S parameter is still big. But if you have bulk fermions and for the light fields, if you localize them close to the Planck brain, then you get this additional suppression factor, so it is somewhat better. But then Z BB bar coupling is also shifted, and you get constraints from basically the S parameter and the Z BB bar couplings. And also one extra ingredient that you can add to somewhat ease these problems is to make the third generation quarks not just an SU2 doublet, SU2 left doublet, but make it a bi-doublet under SU2 left cross SU2 right. And so doing so, these people showed will protect the ZBB bar coupling. The same custodial symmetry can be used to protect the ZBB bar coupling. And but still, the S parameter would give you the biggest constraint then. And you will get a constraint which is somewhat that Z prime has to be, and the W prime has to be in this range 2 or 3 GeV. And the detailed study was done by these people here. But again, Stopper pointed out that there might be ways around this thing. And so this is somewhat model-dependent statement. So it is still worthwhile to look for these resonances, keeping in mind that in the specific realization, these constraints might be relaxed. So before I go into the exact signatures, let me make the gauge sector more concrete. So we have a bulk gauge group, as I mentioned, which is SG2 left cross, SG2 right cross U1X. And that will result in three neutral gauge bosons. Let me call them W3 left, W3 right, and X. And then we have two charged gauge bosons, which I'll call W left and W right, just for notation. So we know that the SU2 right has to be broken because we don't see it realized in low energy. So since it's an extra dimensional model, we have the avenue of breaking this SU2 right by boundary conditions, which is what I show here. So SU2 right cross U1X can be broken to U1 hypercharge by appropriate choice of boundary conditions of these bulk fields. So by a change of basis, I can then express W3 left, W3 right, and X as W3 left B and ZX. So I've just redefined W3 right and X as B and ZX. And so ZX is this linear combination here. And B is the orthogonal linear combination here. And so by making appropriate choice of boundary conditions in the extra dimensions for this B, by making it a plus plus, you will retain zero mode and not break that generator. And so that you'll still be retained in the master spectrum. But by making the orthogonal combination, which I call ZX, as a minus plus, then you break that generator and make that associated gauge boson ZX heavy. And so this is just breaking the symmetry by applying boundary conditions. So in case you're not familiar, minus plus here means that at Y equals zero, you make the field vanish, and at y equals phi r, the other end of the extra dimension, you make the derivative vanish. So plus just refers to Neumann boundary condition, and minus refers to Dirichlet boundary condition. So by making it minus plus, you project out the zero mode, breaking the symmetry, and by making a plus plus, you retain the zero mode and keep the symmetry intact. So I'm sure this is familiar to you all here. So that was breaking SU2 right cross U1X to hypercharge by boundary conditions. And in the usual way, you can then break SU2 left cross U1 hypercharge to electromagnetism by Higgs, which is localized close to the IR brain. And then that would be breaking W3 left B combination to the photon, massless photon, and a massive Z in the usual way that we do in the standard model. And so eventually, after this second step of breaking, you basically go from W3 left B and ZX to the photon Z, what will become our standard model Z, and another gauge boson ZX. So basically, these are what I'll be referring to when I say Z prime. So a brief word about Kaluza-Klein expansion. I won't dwell on this thing, so you can expand it in terms of a complete set in the five-dimensional space. Y is the five-dimensional coordinate, and these X is the usual 4D coordinate, Minkowski coordinate, so you can expand in a tower of 4D states. And so the zero mode for our gauge fields are this A0, Z0, and W0. So I mentioned that ZX has the minus plus boundary condition, so its zero mode is projected out, and so there's no zero mode for the ZX, but the first KK excitation will be present. So in the first level, you have the A1, Z1, and the ZX1, which are referred to as the Z prime, and then in the charge sector, you have the WL1 and the WR1, and in the neutral sector, this would be our zero mode charge, W And so this I'll refer to as W prime. And an interesting fact is that after electroweak symmetry is broken by the Higgs mechanism, you can mix a lot of these fields. So these are still in the interaction eigenbasis. So you can mix Z0 and Z1, that's the zero mode, and the first KK mode in the Z. You can similarly mix zero and KK with ZX. And also you can have a mixing in the first level between the Z1 and the ZX mode. Similarly, in the charge sector, you can mix this zero mode in the KK with either of them, and you can mix in the first level. So there will be all these mixings present, and so you have to re-diagonalize in order to get your mass eigenstates. And so after you do that, in the zero mode, you get your mass eigenstate photon, which is massless, and the mass eigenstate heavy state, which you would identify as the standard model Z. And then again, you have the W plus minus, which would be the standard model W. And you would have the mass eigenstates A1, Z1, ZX1, and the charge WL and WR. So for the rest of the talk, I'll just look at only the mass eigenstates. So whenever I show something, it is these mass eigenstates that we are working with. OK, one aside about representations. As I mentioned, so you can have the Z to BV bar protected by a non-trivial choice of the third generation fermion. So you can make it a bi-doublet. So this is our usual top left and bottom left. But if you complete the representation in order to make it a 2,2, then you need to introduce new exotic fermions to complete the multiplet. So you can extend the theory in such a way to make it manifestly invariant under SU to left or SU to right. And that will have nice properties in terms of protecting Z to BB bar, which is what was shown by these people here. And so we will work in this concrete representation here because that has best properties in terms of precision electroweak constraint. So you could look for these exotic fermionic states also, but I won't be talking about that here. So in order to get the couplings, we need to specify what exact profiles all these fermions and the gauge bosons have in the bulk. And so the bulk mass parameter, which is usually denoted as a C parameter, controls fermion localization. So by playing around with the C parameter, I can either localize something close to the IR brain or close to the UV brain. And so the light fermions are localized close to the Planck brain, which I generally refer to as chi. Chi here refers to some light fermion. And top right is localized close to the IR brain. And the Higgs, we want localized close to the IR brain to solve the hierarchy problem. And so this is done so that the overlap of the Higgs with light fermions are small, because one is localized close to the Planck brain and the other close to the IR brain, so that their overlap is small and hence generating a small Yukawa in the 4D theory. So that's the basic problem.
You're assuming there's an elementary scalar in the bulk, or it's A5 that is the
Higgs? It could be compatible, so we can leave that unspecified. Okay. So it is, yeah. So for the collider signatures, we don't care. So if it is a delta function, you will have a stronger coupling to the KK states. But if it's an A5, you have a smaller enhancement. But for that, we don't really care. And so the top right is localized close to the IR brain so that you get a large top mass, a bigger overlap with the Higgs. So the top left, bottom left, and the top right have significant overlap with the Higgs, thus generating a large 4D Yukawa coupling. And the light fermions are light because they have a small overlap with the Higgs. So that's how this explains the flavor hierarchy in the standard model. And it does this in a way keeping FCNC's quote unquote safe, you know, given Andy's talk yesterday. So, but there are points at least where you can still hope to have a reasonably light resonance. with additional flavor symmetries or something like that. So this allows you at least the possibility that you can probe for these at the LHC. And one note about gauge boson profiles, so I write in terms of some predefined extra dimensional variable u, which is a function of y, which is extra dimensional coordinate. So the zero mod is flat for the gauge boson. And the first KK is strongly peaked towards the IR brain. So this is a generic feature. And so you will see just by looking at this that the first KK, which we are trying to look for, has a large overlap with the top or the Higgs, top left, bottom left, but a small overlap with light fermions. So that will also impact our couplings at the LHC. And so light quarks, which will be our initial state, the constituents of the proton, will have a small coupling to the first KK that we are looking for, which will make it challenging. And you can also say that the light leptons don't couple much to the excited resonance. So that will make life also challenging because leptons are golden modes in hadron machines, and so that will not be available to us. So the main decay channels of this gauge boson will be to tops, to Higgs, and the top left, bottom left. So these will be the states that we should look for given this kind of framework. So in, I said it in words, but if you actually want to do the numerical coupling, you just take the extra dimensional integral of this overlap. So G here refers to some fermionic profile. So you want a psi excited gauge boson coupling. So you take two of these G psi's with an F for this gauge boson, and you do the extra dimensional integral. It will give you some equivalent 4D coupling, which you then insert in your 4D Lagrangian, and then you have your coupling. And so this is, depending on whether it's plus plus or minus plus boundary conditions, these profiles change, and therefore you get different effective couplings, whether they are a plus plus state or a minus plus gauge boson. So here's a Z prime coupling. So I will talk first about the Z prime analysis, so what, how you look for them and so on. So I will just start with the couplings for the Z prime. I mentioned this K pi R factor, so you, in all of these integrals, when you take them and you take the overlap with the gauge boson, you usually get this factor, which I will define as Xi, and this is some number of the order of 5. And for instance, the Z prime overlap with Higgs, this gives you this factor of Xi, and Z prime overlap with fermions, depending on which fermion it is, given the various profiles that I showed you, you get various effective 4D couplings. So for the top left, bottom left, you get some number of order 1 times the usual 4D standard model coupling. So these I'll show as just the enhancement or suppression compared to standard model coupling. And so if it has a plus plus boundary condition, you get something of the same order as standard model coupling for top left and bottom left. You get an enhancement of this 5 or C for the top right, for a plus plus state, and also for a minus plus state. So for the light fermions, however, so you get a suppression, as I mentioned, that makes sense given the profiles, the argument that I made about peaking at different points in this extra dimension. So if it is a plus plus gauge boson, then you get a suppression of C. And if it's a minus plus gauge boson, then basically it doesn't couple to the zero mod because the gauge boson vanishes near the Planck brain, where most of the support comes from the light fermion. So basically that gives you a zero. So this is kind of a representative enhancement of couplings or a suppression of couplings that we have in our framework. And so this will dictate what branching ratios will be at the colliders and the production cross-section.
So will you have, since you have different couplings of your Z primes to the light and heavy fermions, I presume that will mean that there are flavor-changing Z prime effects as well.
That is right. So that is what Andy talked about yesterday. But
but for your Z primes, have you worried about that in your specific?
So we have not looked at, I personally have not looked at the flavor constraints, but other people have. So Andy talked about it yesterday, and Kaustubh, Sony, and Milan had a paper looking at these flavor violations also. And the fact that if you make the profiles exactly equal in the extra dimension, this is the extra dimensional or the warped gym mechanism that Andy was talking about yesterday, that keeps the FCMCs under control. So it is somewhat under control, but for a generative cover, as Andy showed yesterday, you get two strong constraints of 20 TeV, as he was talking about. But there's a possibility that you can have some flavor symmetries and then lower it down to 3 or 4 TeV.
But he was looking at KK gluon because it is a stronger coupling, so that's where the dominant.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at, specifically the Z prime effects.
Also, you know, the left.
Oh, left, yeah, right.
Yeah.
So the Z probably.
The Z only couples to the left handed guys. Of course, the other one only strictly to the right handed guys. So there's never a left right mixing effect, which is the dominant flavor bound. And there's only a mixing that is proportional, that's suppressed by the left over the KK scale, which that you just showed at the beginning, where the left gauge boson mixes into the right gauge boson. But there's an additional suppression factor here. So the strongest constraint is really the KK gluon.
Yeah, I understand all that. All I'm asking, and I understand that the dominant operators are these left-right mixing things. Nevertheless, there will be effects of just flavor changing Z prime.
Yes.
So the claim is.
I'm just wondering if people are worried about that.
So they are of similar size than the KK gluon, but suppressed by this smaller gauge coupling.
Yeah.
So, but the structure is the same.
Well, I would think that, nevertheless, that at a couple TeV mass, that might still be significant.
Yeah, so you would generically expect that, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I hope you're not going to get a 20 TeV limit or anything, but I'm just.
Yeah, so it's about 3, 4, 5 TeV, depending on the strength of the bulk gauge coupling.
Mm-hmm.
Sri, you must have said this, and I missed it. What are you doing about couplings to the lighter gauge boson?
They're all like in the standard model. So it is the zero mode couplings are arranged to be like in the standard model. You redefine your coupling so that you make sure that the standard model couplings are reproduced, and all of those constraints are satisfied. And only the heavier ones is what I'm referring to.
Right, but the Z prime doesn't decay to the lighter gauge boson?
Yes, it would. Z prime can go to a WW like I will show, for instance. Yeah. And that would be mainly gauge coupling times some mixing factors and so on. But so was that the coupling you were asking about, or like light gauge states to fermions?
No, I'm interested in the Z prime.
Okay, that I will show. Yeah, okay. That's right. Yeah. So that's what I mentioned here. So so the longitudinal modes in the standard model gauge bosons, for instance, by the equivalence theorem, is coming from the Higgs. And so the Z prime coupling to longitudinal gauge bosons, for instance, is like the Z prime coupling to Higgs, which is enhanced by this factor. So there is this very general aspect, no matter what the exact a model that you write down, this is a very general aspect. So there would be an enhancement to longitudinal gauge bosons because of this equivalence theorem. And so that is one fact, and compared to the standard model, I already told you the Z prime couplings to top right is enhanced, and the Z prime couplings to light fermions is suppressed. And so effectively, you can write down the Lagrangian for the light fermions coupling to the KKZ, the KK photon, the KKZ, and the ZX. So you'll get something like this, and you can write it very similar to how this standard model Z couples, but now for the excited state. So this is what you were asking about. So, so by extra-dimensional orthogonality at zeroth order, you don't have a coupling of the KK states to light or standard model gauge bosons, because you cannot take one extra-dimensional gauge boson times something that is constant. If you just integrate over one of the wave functions, it gives you zero by orthonormality. So you cannot have the coupling, but after electroweak symmetry breaking, you induce these couplings. And so after that is taken into account, you can write the effective coupling of a Z prime to WW as a sum of these kinds of interactions. So you, after electroweak symmetry breaking, I told you that Z1 can mix with Z, so that is this cross here. And then the Z couples to W plus W minus in the usual way by given by gauge coupling. And so, or you can have the W1 mixing to W on either leg. And so after you take the sum, you get an effective coupling of Z prime to WW. And even though this thing here is proportional to electroweak symmetry breaking, and you have a suppression of V over MKK squared at this at all of these vertices, but you have an enhancement of Z, but still this is a small number. But it can be overcome for a longitudinal polarization of the final state by this MKK or MZ squared. So because of the two light states that you have, by the equivalence theorem, you can have a longitudinal polarization enhancement of MKK or MZ for each final state. And that can overcome the suppression of V or MKK squared. So it is important to keep this effect.
So what is the mass splitting between the Z prime and W1? Can you allow the decay by splitting Z prime into W1, W?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it is at zeroth order, it is. It depends on which exact, whether you take a minus plus or a plus plus, but that would be a small splitting. It's pretty degenerate. It's mostly degenerate.
It's still it might be.
Yes, yeah, exactly, right. So there's a small splitting, which might be a few, like 100 GeV or like a few tens of GeV, depending on whether it's a plus plus or a minus plus, because you're breaking this SU2.
So at the three levels, this decay is allowed or not? I mean, it's not mass splitting, it's not bigger than W.
No. It depends on the parameter space, I guess, but yeah. That's a good question, I should think.
That will dominate if the mass splitting is significant.
Yeah, that's right. But even if it's allowed, it would be suppressed by phase space, because it's they're pretty degenerate. But that's a good question, so worth thinking about more.
Yeah, it's also small, so it's also compressed.
That's right. So you can get this enhancement, and so it is important to keep these small couplings, which we do. And so after you do that, you get this. You can work out the Z prime DK mode, so I won't dwell on this thing. All the details are not important here. I just wanted to explicitly show that you get this compensation. So basically, kappa is that small mass insertion that I showed you, which is a small number, but you get an enhancement from the longitudinal polarization. And so after you include both of them, eventually they all go like some dependence on MZ, MZ prime, sorry. And so these are decays to longitudinal gauge bosons, Z and a Higgs are here to a pair of fermions, standard model fermions. So they all go like MZ prime. And here is the width, just to give you an idea of how broad these resonances can be. So they're not incredibly broad, they're fairly narrow. So for instance, for a 2 TeV Z prime, you can expect like 100 GeV width for this stage. And so here is a table exactly giving numbers for this choice. And so just to start with the KK photon branching ratios, so as we expect, the TT bar is the biggest one, given the strongest overlap with things peak on the IR grade, followed by W longitudinal, and then the other like BB bar, the lighter states. And in particular, the dielectron channels are much suppressed. So that's an unfortunate thing, because that would have been a golden mode to look for at hadron colliders, but that will not be possible here. Or it might be possible, but requires a lot of luminosity. So the other two Z prime states, the Z1, ZX1, show interesting branching ratios. So here for the Z1, the Z Higgs mode can dominate. the TT bar followed by TT bar, W longitudinal, W longitudinal, and BB bar, L plus L minus. And the ZX1, TT bar would dominate, then W longitudinal, then BB bar, Z Higgs, and L plus L minus. So these are also interesting ones, the TT bar and Z Higgs, WW. So these are all modes that we would like to focus on.
For the WW mode, because of what you said before, the cross section vanishes when you put the C-prime mass to infinity, or not? I mean, when you raise the KK scale,
yeah,
you have decoupling, or?
No, in the end, you will overcome that, because you also enhance the polarization, longitudinal polarization contribution, right? So in the end, this will go like 1 over mkk squared, but you get an enhancement from the longitudinal polarization vector of these states. So in the end, they end up going like mz prime. The decay width goes like the mass. I'm not sure whether you should believe that or not. So I don't know what happens to me.
The kappa has the square root of k pi rc, right? When you raise the kk scale uniformly, you're also playing with rc.
Hmm.
That's a good point.
That's true.
Right, so it probably actually falls faster than that.
No, but that makes it even worse, right? Because the k goes with
you. Yeah, aren't you pushing the profile more and more towards the IR brain?
The large RC, large KK mass is small RC.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little
bit. Yeah,
it does. That's right. It isn't. It just becomes something.
No, but the KK mass is up proportional to K.
No, not prime, no.
Not proportional.
Yeah, it's k times e to the minus k pi rc.
Yeah.
The k is just units there.
Perfect.
Yeah. Oh, you have to say, you have to keep them. You can raise k.
So here's what the cross-section will be like, what we can expect. So so mainly we'll be focusing on Drellian. QQ bar going to Z prime, and the Z prime goes to something, as I showed you earlier. So here's the Drellian cross-section, and here's the WW fusion cross-section. And so for a 2TeV Z prime, you can expect something of the order of a few tenths of femtobar. So this is in picobar here, so it will be a small cross-section.
Oh, is this dominated by the very small couplings to the lighter quarks,
that's
or
right.
by the,
that's right.
and not by the heavier quarks?
What about the coupling?
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
You scatter BB bars.
Yeah, so
that's included.
That is included, but it will give you a smaller contribution than the light quarks. Because B is also not very strongly peaked towards the IR.
So much.
It's only the top right and the W longitudinal that are really peaked.
Okay.
But B would be like the standard model coupling.
So WW fusion doesn't help?
That's right here.
Yeah.
That's somewhat subdominant. Yeah. So again, we are looking for a few tenths, like 50 femtobar kind of a signal. And then you have to fold in the branching ratios and all that. So here are the Z prime channels that we will look at. So I'll be fairly quick in the exact details of the specific modes. I'll try to point out the general features of these modes, and I won't dwell into all of the details. So the Z prime can go to WW, and in the fully leptonic, both of the Ws can go leptonically. And in the semi-leptonic, one of them goes hadronically and the other leptonically. So I'll present what the reach is for each one of these modes. So Z prime to Z Higgs, we consider two cases. One is for a lightish Higgs, 120 GeV, let's say, where the branching ratio to BB bar is the most significant, And so we can look at G going to L plus L minus and H to BB bar. And for a heavier Higgs, you open up the WW mode, and so you can have H going to WW and one of the W's goes leptonically, and the Z going hadronically, so you can look for that one. And the golden mode, V prime to L plus L minus, I'll still show you what luminosity you'll need. It's clean, but needs very high luminosity. So we could have looked for Z prime going to TT bar or BB bar. BB bar is hard given background. G prime to TT bar would have been an option, but we also have to keep in mind that there's this SU3 resonance, the KK gluon, which is sitting in the same place, which has a much higher cross section into TT bar. So that would dominate the mode, that would dominate the decays to TT bar. And so we have this KK gluon pollution. And so if you're looking for the electroweak modes, this might not be the best channel to look for. So RS background to RS. So here are some example distribution of Z prime to WW going fully leptonically. I'll be quick, I won't tell you all of the things here, but basically you can write the dilepton invariant mass distribution here. So this is a cross-section, differential cross-section in picobarn per DeV. And so here is a 2 TeV Z prime, and here is a 3 TeV Z prime. So you have some resonance feature here, and you have the standard model background. So the WW background is here, and the standard model tau tau background is here. And so you can hope, you know, with appropriate cuts to dig out the signal from the background. And so here's a transverse mass being defined like this here. So here's a transverse mass plot, the same kind of a resonant feature for the signal, and here are the same backgrounds.
And so
we assume that you can veto TT bar units. Yeah, that's right. So that is something what one has to include in a detailed study on whether that is actually how much you can actually realize that. So for this first level study, we just ignore that. We can assume that using the additional Bs, you can veto those events, or additional jets in general.
So you're looking for two isolated leptons and no jets.
That's right. Yeah. So in the end, if you apply all the cuts, I won't bore you with all the details of the exact cuts that we apply and all of it, but basically driven by these lepton invariant mass and the transverse mass, or you apply appropriate cuts. And after you do all of it, you will find that for a 2 TeV Z prime, you will need about 100 inverse femtobarn of luminosity, which is fairly big. For 3 TeV, you need a ton. So that needs like a... you need flavor symmetry for that. So you don't have to think about it.
So did you keep all your cuts in a single region? You assume that, you know, 5 sigma, 7 sigma.
Yeah. So maybe if you'll ask me again after I finish, I have a detailed table. I can just show you the exact sequence of cuts that we have.
Sounds great.
So let me stick to this one for now. So you need a lot of luminosity for 3 TeV. This will be a generic feature. So at best, you will need about 300 inverse femtobarn for the Z Higgs mode, I guess. But you need a lot of luminosity. So we look for the super LHC. So here's Z prime, a general issue about the semi-leptonic decay Z prime going to WW going to L nu JJ. And so here's a very generic feature. So no matter what the model this comes from, if you're looking for heavy Z primes, you will face this issue that the decays of the W, the Z prime to W's, the W will be boosted because the Z prime is a very heavy object, and the W have significant boosts, gammas of order 5 or so, or for a 2 TeV Z prime going to 1 TeV. So you have about a gamma of 10. So it's a very large boost of the W. And so the decay products of the W, in particular, if you want to reconstruct the W from the two jets, that will be very challenging because the JJ will be collimated. So the two jets will be very close to each other, and we will not be able to reconstruct the mass of the W. So here is the opening angle of the two W's, so you have something peaking around 0.15, which is a very small opening angle. And for jets which are this close, it will be difficult to reconstruct this W. And so one thing you can do is to just not require them to be separated jets, so you just merge them and treat them as one jet and form what is called as a jet mass. So you just form a jet mass for this object. And so at the partonic level, you will get something like this, which is a sharp peak at the MW. So this is in the ideal world. If you had perfect detectors and everything, you can get this kind of a peak. But we do not have perfect detectors. There are various uncertainties in angles. For instance, theta and phi are not perfectly measured, so you smear them, and energy is not perfectly measured, so you smear them. So we just simulate the uncertainties in a detector by just saying that there is an uncertainty in the energy measure, which is 80% over square root of E. And then you have an uncertainty in theta and phi of about 0.05. So we just smear this sharp spike by these parameters, and you get something that now broadens. So you don't have something that now peaks at MW anymore. You get lighter values too. And that will be a problem because the background, the light jet, you know, like just coming from QCD, if you just compare this to one jet, now that will have some jet mass like that. So it peaks at light masses because like a light jet is massless in leading order, but then it acquires a mass through radiation and so on. But so it will still peak at light lower values. And after smearing this light jet in QCD, now moves a little bit up. And so after smearing, now the separation decreases. So it's not a very sharp separation, and so you will pay a price for that one, and it's not helping you. So that is something that you have to live with. But maybe there are additional handles that you can play with, that if you look at in the EM calorimeter, you might see two cores for these two jets, which you can hope to identify as a non-QCD jet, maybe. And so these detailed studies have to be done in order to show whether this is how far you can use this to your advantage. And after you do, again, you get the same kind of luminosities that you need for this mode.
What did you do to worry about W plus jets acquiring giant mass?
Yeah, we just include that as a background. So again, I can show you the exact distribution, but we include that. So we just apply the cuts. I don't have that in my MS, but I have it in my backup slides. So. CalCAP. Yeah. The leading order, yeah.
Sri, must be a simple explanation. Why did the W mass get larger because of these smearings?
I do not have a good explanation for that. I don't know if somebody else has, but it's basically that when you radiate, you always, I think, tend to increase the mass of the object because you now introduce larger angles, and when you compute the mass of these radiation things, you always move up in mass. You always increase the mass. But that's not a very satisfactory answer, but yeah, I should just say I don't know really exactly why.
Okay. But because kind of, I agree with the broadening aspect. That
right.
That seems intuitive.
Yeah.
The fact that you shifted the mass from 80 GeV up to an average of maybe
right.
120?
Uh-huh. Maybe around 100.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it from an angle. So
okay.
Yeah, I
don't have a good explanation. Something, maybe somebody else knows about it. Yeah. So I should hurry up. So here's Z prime to Z Higgs. Z goes to L plus L minus H to BB bar. So here are some invariant mass distributions. So this is Z Higgs invariant mass. 2T, V3T, V again, and standard model Z, B. Again, because of merging, you can merge these two Bs because these are highly boosted Higgs that is decaying into BB bar. So the BB bar separation won't be large. So you will have to include Z and a single B as a background. So include those. And here's a PT spectrum for what it's worth, so you can apply appropriate cuts. And one issue here, again, very general, is how well can we tag high PTBs? I don't think that there's a completed study yet, but it appears that maybe there are factors. The boost of the bees helps you because the bee lives longer, and therefore the opening angle stays invariant, independent of the boost of the bee. So that fact is helping you, but still I don't know if there's any detailed study. Maybe Joey might comment if there are any detailed studies on exactly what the bee tagging efficiencies are for these highly boosted bees. We are talking about PTs of 500 GeV or so. So these are pretty large PTBs. And so, but we just said that maybe, you know, if conservatively you can expect some rejection of light jets of some factor of 20 or 50, something like that. At lower PTs, it is much higher. We have 150 and so on, right? Factor of 150 rejection of light jets. But if you take a hit and maybe say that there's some factor like this, and charm rejection of about 5 for a bee tagging efficiency of 0.4, so that's what we use. And so these are things that are still ongoing, if I understand correctly. So these studies are being done by Atlas and CMS. So after you do this, the luminosity you would need after applying all the appropriate cuts given by these distributions here, you need 200 inverse per barn and 1,000 inverse per barn. So here is Z prime to Z Higgs for a heavy Higgs. So then Higgs going to WW, you here is a table that I show of all the cuts you can apply. And in the end, you get some significance, which is, I guess this would be the best channel because that would be 100 inverse from the barn for 2 TeV and 300 inverse from the barn for 3 TeV.
Are those 5 sigma numbers?
Yes. So this is get some 4.7 here.
Right, I meant the luminosity.
Oh, so this one is, so for 100 inverse from Taman, you get 11.5 SOR would be. So 5 sigma would be smaller. We can appropriately scale that.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So here's Z prime to L plus L minus. Small, you know, like this is for 2 TeV, we need 1,000 inverse per barn, so that's a large luminosity. So that's a problem as we expected. That's a small benching ratio. So very quickly, I'll run through the W prime analysis, which is ongoing work. So here's the width. So we look at two cases depending on what the top profile is, at the top peak close to the TeV brain or not so close to the TeV brain, but you can ignore that for this discussion here. So we get somewhat larger width because there are some exotic modes that open up for the W prime. So we are looking at a few hundred GeV kind of width for the W prime. So here are the branching ratios again. So you can have TB, W Higgs, then these are the exotic fermion in the 2,2 representation. So you can have non-zero branching ratio into those, which you can look for, but we don't dwell on that here. So you have other modes too, but here you have dominated by the exotic mode, and then you have the ZW and TB and so on. So these are the W modes that we look for. So first to start with the W prime to TB, one aspect that I wanted to point out that so signal cross-section is not that big, so you start with something that's 1/10 of barn after folding in the branching ratio. Background is single top plus QCD WBB, but here it is also TT bar can be important because the top can the top can go to WB, and the W, if it decays hadronically, you have something that looks like a very collimated W and B, and the W going to two jets. So you have two jets and a B, which are all fairly close. And so you might mistake that to be a single jet, and you can confuse that to be a B. So that can be an important issue here. So here, just to illustrate this point, I just show you how, after showering in Pitya, a V-jet might look at these PTs. So you have some shower things here. And here is the same top jet decaying hadronically, the top decaying hadronically. So you have, I show it relative to the largest PT object here. And so you have a BJJ system. And so you can, in a top, you can expect fairly bigger separation. But then I show you also events where the separation is not so large because of the boost. So you can, here's a B, another B event. Because of showering, you can have some separation of these showered objects. And so in the end, you can have the B jet and top jet look similar. So it's not clear that you can, completely suppress the top background. And so again, you can do the jet mass for this object. So here I show the jet mass being done for a B-jet, that's this thing here. And the jet mass for this hadronically decaying top, so that's this thing here. And this is for a cone size of 0.4. And so you see the separation is not very big. So you would expect naively that the top should peak at 175 GeV. But because of all the smearing and the uncertainties in the detector, you can end up shifting the peak fairly significantly, and you have a big overlap. But if you increase the cone size, the situation improves. So now you recover this peak at 175 GeV, and here is the B-jet. So you get a fairly good separation. So you can, by an appropriately chosen jet mass cut, you might be able to suppress TP bar background, but you need to go to a larger cone size for that. So I don't know what other experimental issues you would face if you go to a cone size of 1.0. But that certainly helps in doing this, simply because you collect more of the radiation from the top, and you are more likely to reconstruct the true mass. So we use this jet mass cut here from making a cut at 75 or so. And we find that 0.4% of the tops in the end survive and can fake a B. So that is a small number, but big, given the large TT bar cross-section, it can still be the dominant background. And so after you fold in all the numbers, the luminosity that you need for 2 TeV, 100 inverse femtobarn, and it is not too good for 3 TeV, so that's why I didn't bother putting the number in.
There's a lot of other tools that you could do, because those top jets are going to look different than the B jets, right? They're going to be clustered inside differently. So you could just
certainly, so hopefully after you do all that, even the 3 TeV case can be doable. So, W prime to ZW, so I'm out of time, so I'll be really quick. So fully leptonic, everything going leptonically, you need about 100 inverse femtobarn, and again 1,000. And semi-leptonic, you need much larger, because the W or Z plus 1 jet is large. So semi-leptonic is not very promising here. So W prime to W Higgs, so again, light Higgs. You, for either one, heavy or light Higgs, you get this kind of luminosity that you need, again, 100 or 300. So again, the Higgs modes are the best channels to look for. So it looks like both for W prime and Z prime, either W Higgs or Z Higgs might be the best channel in the end. So that's an overall kind of a conclusion that you can draw. But for 3 TeV, you might need luminosities of the order of 300 inverse femtobarn. Okay, so I'll end there. So here are the conclusions. So so we look for Z prime and W prime. So Z prime, W, W, Z Higgs, and L plus L minus channels. And for the W prime, TB, ZW, Z Higgs. And also, L mu can again be a mode that you can look for again, but needs a lot of luminosity. So TT bar background can become important, but as Joey mentioned, you might have additional handles that you can use to suppress that one. So the overall conclusion is that you can look for these electroweak KK gauge bosons, but you need a lot of luminosity. And So here's summary of what we look for. Should be clear to you by now. And so we hear a few people that helped us out in doing this thing. So various colleagues at BNL, and most of the distributions were done in Calcutta, with all of the showering and things like that being done in Pythia, and a lot of checks with MagGraph and with the program bridge. So, I'll stop here.
Questions?
Let me come back to what I was asking earlier. Since, from what you've shown, you probably don't have much chance of observing something more than 2 TeV. And that's relatively light as far as the Z prime mediated flavor changing neutral currents. And so I come back to the question, even though these are weaker than constraints from other things, are they allowed at 2 TeV?
So the only answer I have for that is that if you actually realize some concrete flavor symmetry, and then if that is something that is realized in nature, then you can ask this question in detail. Because in the scans that Andy showed, that there were a few points that were at light values. But it is ad hoc in a, you know, purely a parameter space point of view.
In the UCAWAS, then there might be points where there's a conspiracy that cancels out those.
This may be obvious to you, it wasn't totally obvious to me. If you manage to suppress the gluon effects, etc., will that automatically suppress the Z prime at the same time?
Yes, they come with the same kind of wave function overlaps.
Mm-hmm. So if you have SO5 in the bulk, there will be more electron engaged bosons, for example, something that looks like a doublet, like in it's a spin wand like a Higgs, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone think about, so that would be the distinguishing from, anybody think about those gauge bosons?
I'm not aware of that, so I don't know. Spin one in the Higgs multiplied here.
Yeah, I mean, because the A5 is the Higgs,
yeah,
but then there would be KK modes in the normal.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But this would be from the A mu part?
The A mu part, there will be normal KK.
Okay. So and then from the A5 part, there will be. No, I'm not aware of anybody actually talking about that yet.
Any other questions? And so one more thing is that for the dinner tonight, if you want to go send a message to Johannes and